It's the inaugural and indeed long-awaited Miami Grand Prix. In spite of America being well known for its love of cars, and in particular car racing, we had years without a US Grand Prix. But now, there are several. US Grand Prix are always known for their prestige and spectacle. But what will the track be like? Will there be overtaking? Will the walls in Miami result in more accidents? And how is the season looking so far? I'm Andrew Elliott. I'm here with my buddy David Proud, and we'd like to welcome you to the special US edition of the Tired and Exhausted podcast. Join us for an ocean drive. So David, your Formula One drinking game didn't go as well as planned, did it?
It tanked. It was the only crash of the entire kind of thing, really. So, just to explain, we had watched all the practices. There had been quite a few incidents, hadn't there?
Yeah, and a fair few.
So we were going to watch the qualifying, and like Billy Big Bananas, I was like, right, let's get a bottle of rum. And every time there's like a yellow flag, we'll drink a shot. And you instantly were like, you can't do that, because they're like, these yellow flags when they just slide off.
Yeah,
like,
as soon as a car leaves the track, for whatever reason, there'll be a yellow flag.
Yeah.
And if they come back on straight away, it'll go to green, but that counts as a yellow flag.
So we compromised on double yellows.
Double waved yellows,
yeah.
Which means, so a yellow flag is slow down, double waved yellows are slow right down, be prepared to stop on the track.
Yeah.
And they're normally quite serious. That normally means someone's beaching the gravel or hit the wall or whatever.
But it's fair to say that you were quite...
I was still a little sceptical that we might actually get smashed, even with double-waved yellows, because I could see there being a few... Based on the practice sessions, I could see there being a few.
A lot of incidents. I was sitting there going, I've got nothing on for the rest of the day. I'm just going to get a little bit smashed. I mean,
It was in the evening anyway, but there was it was a brand new track, so none of the drivers knew the track. They'd obviously they'd used simulators and stuff, but it was the first time they'd ever driven on it.
Yeah,
lots of walls, so not much runoff. Yeah. Few tight chicanes, and we saw quite a few offs, didn't
but
we?
No double yellows. There wasn't even a yellow, was there?
I don't remember there being a single yellow flag. No double waved yellows. No reds. No stoppages. Nothing. So we went through the whole qualifying sober.
Yeah,
which wasn't the plan at all.
And I had a miserable kind of look on my face at the end of it.
I couldn't believe it. Even if we'd have done it on yellows, which was your original suggestion, we'd have still been sober.
Yeah, crazy.
Should we go back to the practice sessions? Because we did watch those.
Very much so.
So practice one, I don't know about you, the thing that I noticed most about it was there wasn't really any porpoising from any of the cars, even the Mercedes, which porpoises before all the other cars start. You know, it porpoises at a much lower speed.
Yeah, because you'd seen P1 before I did.
And then we watched the recording again.
Mercedes are, doing really well. And they were
quick. They were quick, and in but all the cars, the Ferrari is known for porpoising as well.
Yeah,
it's obviously blisteringly fast, and as soon as it, normally when it comes off the throttle and goes into the corners, it stops porpoising and is great. But even the Ferraris weren't really porpoising, the Mercedes weren't. None of the cars seemed to be, which was really strange.
Yeah, I mean, one of the Ferraris wasn't porpoising because it was broke. Because of an accident. Poor old Sainz again.
Yeah, Sainz later on in the session.
You don't experience any porpoising when you don't have wheels on your car.
No. But all the cars seemed... And they were... It's a low downforce track. So
yeah.
They've got smaller wings. The front wing isn't... And the rear wings are often slightly smaller, or they're not designed to take as... to generate as much drag. And they think perhaps because of that... apparently, I know at least the Mercedes had a slightly higher ride height, and that's always that's the quickest fix to fix the porpoising, because it means that the car won't be bottoming out and losing drag through the tunnels in the underfloor, which they've got this season. So they kind of fixed that with raising the ride height, and then I think in practice too they were fast. In fact, Russell was top, I think, wasn't he, in practice too? So they were really, really quick. In practice three, they decided to add to lower the ride height to see if they could get away with a little bit more. And the porpoising came back, so they increased the ride height back again, but the porpoising didn't go away, which is a bit strange.
It's weird because we said this really early on in our podcasts about this porpoising being a thing, and it's become such a major talking point this year.
It's because they just look unprofessional. You know, they're supposed to be the best cars in the world, and they're bouncing up and down, and it just looks comical.
Well, it looks uncomfortable for the drivers as well.
Oh, it is. It is. I mean, George Russell has said that he's had to train his neck for vertical motion as opposed to just horizontal, because they train their neck to cope with the amount of G-force that they get when they're going around corners, which is side to side. But he's had to do completely different exercises now, strengthen his neck because it's bouncing up and down so much.
Yeah, it must be like a teenager or something in terms of weight, like jumping up and down. I wonder
where are you going with that?
Yeah. No, in terms of weight, just like jumping up and down on, you know, on the head. That's, you know, there's going to be a lot of weight going downwards. If you can hear a purring.
Oh, yeah, that's Stewie. That's what we've got. Stewie. We've got three cats in here.
Yeah. But that is, can you hear that? It's a beautiful purring. So practices. It's fair to say we were quite concerned, thinking, oh, God, there's going to be a lot of incidents.
There were a few incidents. So Ocon had another unsafe release, didn't he?
Yeah.
Into the path of Russell, which he had one in Imola, didn't he? And he's had another one. Do you remember Ricardo's incident? Who you, in fact, you,
do you want to explain what I said?
You knew it was Ricardo even before
it came up,
camera.
Didn't it? And it said, an incident between Ricardo and who was it? Somebody. It doesn't really matter.
Schumacher.
Who. Yeah,
Mick Schumacher.
Yeah, yeah. Oh, actually, it does, because even Mick Schumacher, you think he's quite new to it. But it said Daniel Ricciardo and another driver incident is being investigated. And I said instantly, it's Ricciardo's fault. Like, I hadn't even seen it. I just went, it's going to be Ricciardo's fault, isn't it?
He's just not on form at the moment, is he?
No, and you would assume that because it's Mick Schumacher, the more experienced driver wouldn't be at the fault. But then what happened? Turned out to be Ricciardo's fault.
I know. And Bottas hit the barrier. He had a bit of an incident. Sainz had another big off.
Yeah, but then he really recovered the weekend well, I think, you know, to get third. You know, that's quite a good recovery, I think. He really did quite well. I mean, in I think Ferrari in general have got to watch it because they're competitive, they're up there, but their straight line speed is just not there.
Well, yeah, a few drivers, because Sainz had an off in practice one. He also binned it again in practice two. And Verstappen had issues as well.
But then we just didn't see him for most of the race. He was just out front doing...
In practice session he had kind of brake issues. One of his brakes caught fire, so he didn't get a lot of running.
That's the only thing that's, I think, alarming me, is there's been a lot of glitches with the Red Bull team, and I don't know. I don't think we're getting a full picture of exactly what's going on there, because he did brush the wall in the practice.
But yeah, I don't think that's what it was.
No damage. No, I think that whatever this thing is with the brakes overheating.
Well, so he brushed the wall, after that they made a precautionary kind of gearbox change. Mm. I like you, I thought that was because he'd hit the wall and there was perhaps some damage, but apparently it had been overheating anyway. So as a precaution, they thought we'd rather change the gearbox to be on the safe side, and then investigate the old gearbox. And if nothing's wrong, we can use that later on in the season.
I mean, it's interesting to look at the fact that Red Bull have got obviously something going on with the car that they're not quite sure of. Mercedes are struggling in every way you can possibly struggle. Ferrari have done better than they've ever done, but still straight line speed is kind of eluding them. There's none of the constructors are particularly firing on absolutely all cylinders.
It's because it's new. It's brand new regulations. Yeah. Brand new regulations. I mean, you cast your mind back to when the hybrid era started. You know, Mercedes were by far the quickest and the most reliable. But even then, I mean, in that first season, you know, they had several issues. You know, Rosberg and Hamilton's cars both broke down several times. In the season when Rosberg won, I think Hamilton had 6 issues with his car where he had to kind of change vital parts with it, and either completely screwed up qualifying or had to retire from the race. Rosberg only had 3 that season, which is, let's face it, why he won. You know, Hamilton only had 5 issues. And Rosberg's issues were mainly in qualifying as well, so he'd be able to recover in the race because he had such a quick car, whereas Hamilton would have issues in the race and have to retire. So even back then, you know, all the teams were struggling with reliability. You know, it takes a while when you're basically building brand new cars. You know, there's a lot to take into account. They just don't have the testing. Like, they're not allowed to test as much as they were back in the day.
Skipping over the qualifying that was totally uneventful and I was sat there not able to drink my rum. Let's go to the race and George Russell, because again he got really, really
Perfect lucky. Perfect timing for he just, safety cars are his best friend.
Yeah, he's gone from being Mr. Saturday, isn't he, to Mr. Safety Car.
Yeah, because he didn't have a particularly good qualifying. You know, out qualified significantly by Hamilton, which is unusual for George, because he's brilliant been on a Saturday. Just couldn't get the lap time in. But yeah, because he started you know, outside the top 10, stuck him on the hard tyres. They took like 15 or 20 laps to get properly warm, and within that kind of operating window. But then once he was on those, he was fine and found that he could just go on because they weren't really wearing down. So he could just hang on until there was a safety car, whenever it was. Whereas obviously Hamilton couldn't, you know, he'd already changed his tyres by that point. So Russell effectively got not a free stop, but a very, very cheap pit stop, and managed to score some really decent points.
We'll talk about somebody that stuffed it up in terms of the pitting and just strategy and just a bit of bad luck, Lando Norris. I mean, the pit stop was not great. It put him out in a really bad position.
Yeah, it took a little bit longer, didn't it?
Hard tyres were just mush, weren't they? They just weren't providing any grip. And then I thought he was doing well. He was fighting back really well. And that that smack up was Gasly, wasn't it? Was it Gasly? I'm trying to remember who smacked into him.
Yeah, it could have been.
Yeah, I think he was unlucky, but it definitely wasn't Lando's fault. When you look at it from every angle, you know, the other driver, I'm almost sure it was Gasly, which just wasn't even you know, aware that he was there. And it's disappointing. And but what it does, I think, is it shows the pressure that Lando's under, because every driver will have a, you know, DNF or a, you know, time where they get smacked into. If you look at Sainz the other weekend, he, no fault of his own, he got smacked into, his race is over. But if you're the one holding your team up in terms of points, if you're the one that's bringing in all the results, and then you have a DNF, that's when you need your second driver or the other driver to be really showing what they've got. And at the moment, it's just not there.
Ricardo's just, he hasn't been there for over a season. I
love him as a person as well. I think he's a great character. He needs to find form and consistency, and I think he needs to do it quick, because
I think McLaren will get rid of him if he doesn't perform this season.
Yeah,
I would imagine so, because he's not, you know, he's not scoring the points.
No,
he's having quite a few unenforced errors, a few accidents. I mean, you mentioned Sainz. You know, last time around getting knocked into, you know, that was Ricardo. Yeah, he just needs to. The Ricciardo of a few years back, when he was Sebastian Vettel's teammate and was out qualifying, and you know, he won three races that season.
But then this is what we're talking about. We're talking about good driver, great driver, championship driver. And you can have a good car, you can have a great car, you can have a championship car. There's different tiers. So arguably, the season that he was with Red Bull, he was in a championship quality car. But
it was, I mean, it wasn't compared to the Mercedes. The Mercedes was the only really championship winning car that season.
Okay, so then it's a great car.
It was a very, very good car.
You're talking about a good driver and a great car. Now he's a good driver in a good car, but Lando Norris is a great, arguably future championship driver in a good car. What he is wringing out of that car is—it's like when you looked at George Russell at Williams. What he was able to get out of that car was phenomenal. That was not a great car.
But don't forget though that Vettel, so this was the first season, the first of the hybrid era, and Sebastian Vettel had just come off the back of winning four back-to-back world championships. Yeah. So he wasn't against an average driver then.
Yeah.
You know, he was up against the recent four-time current world champion as his teammate, and was beating him. You know, was beating him in virtually every single race. Arguably, Vettel switched up a little bit.
Yeah.
But he just doesn't seem to be, he's not the racer that he was back then. Mm. Even a couple of years back when he was with Renault, you know, he was pretty good, you know, up against Hülkenberg and people. You know, he was a fast driver. He was getting podiums from a car that wasn't amazing.
I hate to diss on him. I really do.
Whereas now he just seems to switch off. Like Vettel seemed to switch off after winning the four world championships, and suddenly he finds himself in an average car. He just seemed to lose interest a little bit.
Yeah.
Daniel Ricciardo seems to have done that as well. And I didn't expect that, because listening to him in interviews before he joined McLaren, he kept saying, look, I think I'm a future world champion, and I'm, you know, I rate myself up there with everyone on the grid, and I just need to be given the car, and I'll be given the car with McLaren. And okay, he hasn't been given a world championship car, but he's been given a good car.
But I'm willing him to do it. That's the thing. I'm sitting there every weekend, fingers crossed, going, this will be the weekend where it all just clicks.
Sometimes drivers just get, demoralised because their teammates are that bit better. I mean, Hamilton's had that effect on some people. You know, with Heikki Kovalainen, who wasn't a bad driver, he just obliterated him. you know, he got under Alonso's skin. It was twice world champion at the time in McLaren, and then Hamilton was beating him. You know.
Well, on that subject, let's
So Alonso with do you remember when Felipe Massa was with Ferrari, and then Alonso joined Ferrari, and Felipe Massa went from being the second driver, and then when in 2008, it was 2008 because Kimi Raikkonen won the world championship in 2007. In 2008, Kimi Raikkonen was supposedly the top driver, but he wasn't performing that well. And then throughout the course of the season, Massa became the number one driver. So they were kind of backing him 100%. And he obviously nearly won the world championship at that point. So he was their number one driver. Alonso comes along and, again, just demoralises him right from the word go. You know, he was... I remember, on one of the early races, they were going to double pit. So they're going to double pit the Ferraris. Mm. And driving into the pit lane, Alonso cuts the corner, gets in front of him, and says, "Yeah, just says, yeah, I'm going to be first, mate." Mm-hmm. And little things like that. And he just, you know, obviously, Alonso qualifying is amazing. And then Massa's head just seemed to go after that. And I think the same's happened to Ricciardo. He's got in the car, and it's, you know, last season it arguably wasn't a particularly easy car to drive. But he's got Lando Norris, who's amazingly talented, and he just upstaged him all the time. Yeah. And instead of fighting it, is just switched off.
I'm willing him to get better. So we'll go on to former mates, teammates in a second. I'm going to stop in a second and talk about what you're drinking, which will be Hamilton and Bottas. But what are you drinking?
I'm drinking some Gentleman Jack, which is a birthday present. Oh. So it's I was going to say bourbon. It's not bourbon because it's technically bourbon has to be distilled within Kentucky, and this is just outside. So sour mash is exactly the same thing. Nice. Yeah, it's nice. I'm normally a Scotch man.
Sounded but very
this is,
good.
Yeah, this is nice.
As you poured it into your glass.
And what are you on?
which is asked of me lots of, like, what are you on? I am drinking gin and tonic.
You're a bit of a convert now, aren't you?
I am, yeah. I've discovered it in the last, like, month or so. I think I went away for a work thing and I did a gin and tonic, like, welcome drinks. And it was a long drive. Drove to Scotland and had a couple of gin and tonics, which is not my normal drink, but really, really liked it. And then found myself asking for it at the bar like the whole entire weekend. So this is a Bombay Sapphire gin with, I've got a Mediterranean tonic in this, but yeah, normally drink it with the elderflower and a little bit of lemon, a little bit of lime. That's me. But I've also got a present for you.
Well, that's
ta-da!
Chocolate buttons.
Chocolate buttons, hey, yeah, getting lashes around them.
We'll open them off mic, I think, because they're quite loud.
Yeah, it's a bit. And I think we can't do a motoring podcast without talking about the fact you've been a very naughty boy, Andy. You've been a very naughty boy, haven't you? What's this on your?
You're not talking about that, are we?
Yeah. We're definitely talking about that. Well, actually, I've also been a naughty boy. I got a parking ticket, but I use sarcasm to get out of it.
Yeah, your parking ticket wasn't quite as bad because your... Well,
my blue badge had expired and then...
But it only just expired. It was probably like two days or something, wasn't it?
Yeah, so I wrote a very sarky kind of appeal just saying, you know, a note on the windscreen would have been nice. You know, it was a genuine mistake. But do you want to tell the ladies and gentlemen what you've done?
Well, yeah, so I've got a penalty charge notice.
What for, Andy?
Well, apparently, I don't remember this saying this, but apparently, I drove through a bus lane in Cambridge picking up a new iPhone for my wife for her birthday.
But that road is so. I mean, it says a bus gate.
It basically the road turns into a bus lane, and I didn't see that.
And then turns out of it straight away. It says a bus gate, so only buses can go through. But there's no bollard, there's nothing. It's just a painted area and a sign. I'd have done exactly the same thing.
Yeah, I don't remember seeing any signs.
Sorry.
And I was following the sat nav as well.
Well, that's the thing. You may have glanced down at the sat nav at that particular moment where it decided to become a bus gate.
Well, the
sat-nav, I didn't even know that was a thing.
No, I mean, ideally, I guess the sat nav should warn you, saying this is a bus lane. but yeah, so I've been charged £60.
Oh.
Which is ridiculous.
Well, at least you've got some Gentleman Jack to drown your sorrows.
I mean, I don't have any points on my license now, which is nice.
That's great.
But I've had 9 points on my license a couple of times.
Have you? I didn't know this.
Yeah. Well, so back when I started seeing Julie, she was living in Essex and I was living in Peterborough, and I was working in Aylesbury.
I mean, what size are your feet though? Like
12.
Yeah. I mean, that's quite a weight on the old accelerator, isn't it?
Well, I was driving to and from Aylesbury every single day for work.
Yeah.
And then a couple of nights a week I was driving over to see Julie, and then sometimes and I was playing volleyball for Coventry at the time as well, so I had to kind of go to and from Coventry to train.
My God.
I was driving so much. I had the odd kind of I remember the training camps for the England volleyball squad, and I had to kind of drive and see them, and had games all over, and I was basically doing at least 1,000 miles a week at the time, and you know, kind of driving back from Julie's late at night, you just want to get home. You know, when you're driving 1,000 miles a week, you just want to get home. And I put my foot down, and I got caught 3 times doing, like, you know, 38 in a 30 or something, you know, just outside the limit where you're not allowed to do the test.
And just for anybody not in the UK, you hit 12 points, they take your license off you. So, and it's 3 points per infraction, isn't it? So you were one speeding ticket away from...
Yeah, I think I could have possibly argued my case that I needed my car for work, and they could have given me the points, but a huge fine instead of...
God, your insurance must have been awful for a few years.
Well, but... yeah, and then it went down to 6 and then went up to 9 again. but yeah, it was crazy. But I was doing 1,000 miles a week, you know. So it was, you know, and I remember thinking this is not fair because, you know, for me, getting if I get 3 points on my license, and they last for 3 years, don't they?
Yeah.
And that's 150,000 miles for me to drive to get those off.
Yeah.
Whereas for a normal person doing say 12,000 miles a year. They only have to drive 36,000 miles, and the points are off.
Good reasoning. Good reasoning.
So I remember thinking my point should go off in a few months. Sooner.
Yeah, it should be a mileage thing. Yeah, you drive a certain amount of miles safely, and they drop off.
Yeah,
that makes sense.
That would make sense for me. So I remember getting a bit cheesed off about those, but
luckily, no points for violating a bus gate.
No, I remember as well. My brother was doing something like he got caught. Doing something like 120 on the A1M.
Oh my God, isn't that an instant ban?
Well, he got caught doing that. He admitted, he went to court, he admitted to doing 105, even though they kind of caught him. He said, look, I'll admit to 105, got a really decent lawyer. Ended up getting a fine of a few hundred pounds and 6 points. When he was doing, so he was doing like 120, he gets 6 points.
Allegedly, we're going to say allegedly.
I do like 35 three times and I get 9 points. Mm. How is that fair? It's ridiculous.
Well, well done to your brother's lawyer, by the way. We will say the word allegedly. So back to Hamilton, back to the podcast. Hamilton and Bottas. I'm loving how competitive Bottas is.
Yeah,
brilliant. And how close he is to Hamilton. It's like you said it's like trolling. It's just he's kept quiet. He's just letting his results speak for themselves. Isn't it brilliant to see?
Yeah, I mean he must feel great having been basically fired from Mercedes. You know, to negotiate a deal with a team that was a lot lower down than Mercedes were, and now they're in a better car, arguably, as a comparable car.
And Hamilton, while we're on the subject of Hamilton, let's discuss his off-track woes, which I think are really, I think this is silly, about his jewellery.
Well, they're going to be on-track woes, aren't they, if they don't let him wear them?
Well, yeah, he's, so they are switching the race director after the Lewis Hamilton jewellery row, apparently, in Miami. So they've got a 2-on, 2-off anyway. But it's not just them, because they've tightened up on, this actually really quite made me laugh, they've tightened up on jewellery and underwear. Underwear. I don't know much about this, but I kind of want to delve deeper, not into underwear, but to the story, because it's really... and Vettel has opposed this and said that he's old enough to make his own decisions. In relation to jewellery or underwear, but well, either no,
did
way.
Did you see him with his underwear?
Oh, is that why he had his underwear?
He had
outside?
His underwear on the outside.
That makes more sense now. Yeah. That makes so much more sense.
He wore his underwear on the outside like Superman.
So that's what it was relating to. Mm. So basically, Lewis Hamilton's been given to Monaco to remove his jewellery.
But that just seems...
How is a nose stud?
Any body jewellery. It's not like it's a contact sport.
No, like, I mean, I played wheelchair basketball. You had to take off anything, you know. I mean, if you had jewellery in, you just had to tape it. So if you had earrings in, you just had to tape them.
Sure.
Or, you know, nose... I don't know anyone that wore a nose stud, but I presume they would have to just tape it. I mean, obviously, necklaces and bracelets.
I can understand if you're in a contact sport and you're wearing bracelets and jangly jewellery and stuff.
They could get caught whatever.
You know,
and
it could cause injuries. You know what, take
but
that
what
off.
What are the statistics on jewellery-related accidents in contact sport, let alone non-contact sport?
And things like, so piercings that are, you know, like a nose stud is a tiny, tiny piercing, isn't it? They're really, really fine, really, really fine gauge. if he, I mean, it, one, they're difficult to take out.
Yeah.
I mean, one, I remember one of the girls I fostered a few years ago had a few piercings. And they can be quite difficult to take out. I remember
You can't take out on your own. You have to get them done, don't you? You have to.
Yeah, well, I remember once she had like an infection in one of her ear ones, and I had to it took some pliers to get it, yeah, to get it out. But what will happen as well, because your nose studs are tiny, really, really fine, and if you take that out, over the course of the race, that will heal. So yeah. He will no longer have,
especially if he's hot and he's sweating and he's, you know,
he won't be able to re-pierce it after the race. You know, a few minutes you'll get away with it, but that will, I'll guarantee that would heal after a couple of hours.
I just think it's quite petty.
Yeah, it's ridiculous,
and I can understand the driver's kind of. I mean, okay, so if there's a fire, there is an argument that if you had a necklace on or a bracelet on, it could conduct heat or whatever.
Or it could get caught on something.
Yeah.
But they're easy to take off. You can't... Piercings are a lot harder to take out.
Yeah, I don't think a nose stud is causing him any undue risk. And I think that if he's happy to assume whatever risk
that is... If he's happy
to
drive at 200 miles an hour...
While the car's porpoising.
In a car that has an open cockpit...
That's porpoising.
That's bouncing up and down. He should be able to sign a waiver and say, you know what, I'm fine with whatever risks are associated with wearing this
ring.
Tiny little nose ring.
Yeah, I think it's.
But you know, joking aside, whatever he's got pierced, you know,
wait,
It shouldn't make a difference, should it? It shouldn't make a difference to. You know, it shouldn't make a difference to your driving at all.
No,
you know, it's not like you say. It's not like he's wearing this Mr. T style heavy jewelry that could get in the way and could catch on stuff when he jumps out of the cockpit. It's a tiny little nose stud.
I almost did my Mr. T impression, but I won't.
I think that's ridiculous. I think that's absolutely ridiculous rule.
Yeah, Leclerc. Let's talk about Leclerc. He's holding on in there, isn't he? But. Straight line speed. Should we go through the standings, actually?
Yeah, go through the standings. Because I don't think Leclerc's doing badly.
No, he's not. But I think that they could do with a few circuits that favour the Ferrari in terms of...
Well, they will have. This one was very much a low downforce straight line speed circuit. So, you know, the Red Bull is obviously... quick and will be quick in this circuit. Other circuits like Spa, for example, will probably favour the Red Bull.
What did Monza. You think to Miami, by the way? Because we haven't gone into that. I quite liked it. The chicane had me kind of holding my breath every time
I thought it was not enough overtaking.
Yeah.
Overtaking. It wasn't really an overtaking track. It was qualifying was quite exciting.
I love the fact their freeway goes straight over the top of it.
Mm.
And can we just give a little shout out to the fake they had all the boats there, didn't they? They had a fake marina. And I love the American ingenuity to go, oh God, you know, this doesn't look at all like Monaco. Do you know what? We'll just fake it. We're just going to... No, as in like saying like, oh, we need to make this look more like Monaco. And so they just faked Monaco by bunging a load of like yachts. They were like small yachts and some fake water.
Well, it was supposed... They wanted to have it near the beach.
Right.
With the sea in view. But apparently... all the residents there were like up in arms. All the Miami residents said, we can't have the Formula One where we live. So they had to do it, you know, in the middle of Miami, where there wasn't a beach in sight.
Right.
Which is a bit
well, there's a freeway. But I did like the fake marina. I have to say, big shout out to anyone that thought of that. Right. So drivers, we've got Leclerc in first. Then it's Max Verstappen. Sergio Perez, who's doing really quite well. I think
what are the points? How many points do they have?
So Leclerc has got 104 points. Max Verstappen has got 85 points. So sorry about that noise from my mouth. He could
It's not even a race. All Leclerc needs is a DNF, and Verstappen is in the lead again potentially. So that's nothing at this stage.
And then Max Verstappen to Sergio Perez is 85-66, but obviously they're teammates. So, but then George Russell is down with 59, and then it's Sainz in 53 because he's just had a mare of it. Then Lewis has climbed to 6. Looks like doing the charts. New in, that's number 6, Lewis Hamilton, 36 points. Lando Norris at 35 points because obviously he had a DNF. So Valtteri Bottas at 30. So I love the fact that Valtteri Bottas is within 6 points of Lewis Hamilton. That's amazing. I must say it's my week off this week, and losing the ability to actually speak because my brain has switched off, and I spent a large amount
Nobody
of time.
Nobody will notice.
thank you very much. Spent a large amount of time in IKEA today, which I never thought I would actually get out of. There was one point I was surrounded by all the Tupperware. I was like, no shop needs this amount of like plastic boxes. It was just insane. Sorry, little sidebar. So constructors, when I'm done with my plastic boxes, constructors, Ferrari 157 points, Red Bull at 151. That's tight. That's very close.
I think the Red Bull overall is a faster car as well. I mean, it does depend on the circuit, like you say. It does depend on whether they're tight and twisty, or whether they've got big long straights. But I think overall, the Red Bull at the moment is a better car if they can keep it reliable.
Yeah.
So but it's not one issue. I mean, the Mercedes has what appears to be one issue, which is it's bouncing up and down. The Red Bulls have had a few issues. It just seems general reliability.
I think Red Bull had a bad start, but getting there. I think Ferrari had a great start, and maybe some gremlins might kind of come into play. But
I think with Ferrari, is that
a yawn?
No.
Mr. Elliot?
It's with the Ferrari, it's more... that they've been making mistakes.
Yeah, okay.
So Leclerc, had a bit of an unenforced error in the last race. Sainz has obviously crashed a few times and he's been hit by Ricciardo. So that's not really reliability or anything. They've still got a very good car and it seems very reliable.
So Questione, Ferrari at 157, Red Bull at 151, Mercedes a third, guess their points. In the region of
95.
Bang on, it's 95.
Really?
Yeah. Had you read that?
No. It literally is 95. Your phone is over there. 95. I haven't checked the scores since you last read them out on the last podcast.
I mean, it's and you should continue to do that. So there's an element of surprise, but that's a big drop between 151 and 95.
Yeah, that's.
I mean, Toto Wolff has said that they're in no man's land or no man's island or something. And I get what he means by that. Neither of their drivers are competing for a championship, and constructors, they're third, but third with a huge, huge mountain to climb. And then it's, I'm going to use the same gag, then it's Lando Norris with 46 points.
How many is Ricciardo? Ricciardo hasn't. Go back to the drive. How many? What's the points delta between Ricciardo and Norris?
Come on. Right, so Ricciardo's got 11 points.
And what does Norris have?
Okay, Norris has... I do love you, Daniel. I'm really hoping that you pick up form. That's all I'm saying. Lando has got 35.
Right, okay. So yeah, over 3 times. And yes. He's had a DNF.
And he's at a podium. Yes. That's quite telling. Mm. Right, so...
I mean, imagine if he'd have scored points this weekend as well.
Yeah. And then it's Alpha at 31. They've done... Zhou Guan Yu is doing really, really quite well, actually, I think, for a rookie. We were saying, as rookies go, like...
Yeah, I mean, unfortunately, he had to retire, didn't he, this weekend?
Yeah.
But he's been... absolutely solid. He's been good in qualifying. He's been, he's had good practice sessions. He's had really good racing, some good overtakes, mature driving. Hasn't been, think of some of these other kind of new drivers that come out of the lower formulae, and they just they kind of try and race and try and overtake at the earliest possible opportunity, like Max Verstappen did early on, and end up having issues and accidents.
But he's been
really good.
He is, and Tsunoda's.
He's been gaining form as well.
Yeah, he? Yeah. It's really lovely to see. Like, but Joe Guanyu hasn't took that time to bed in. I'm smiling because I got the pronunciation correct. So then it's Alpine with 26. Aston Martin now have 6 points. Aston Martin, what a weird reason for starting in the pits this weekend.
Yeah. So
was too.
Yeah, they chilled the fuel too much, and that's not allowed because you get more horsepower.
How do you get more horsepower with colder fuel? I don't understand the engineering of that, but I'd love to. We both looked at each other and went,
yeah, I'm not too sure, but yeah, they chilled it too much, and presumably because you get more horsepower, there would have been a pretty hefty penalty for having too cold fuel that's too cold, and I imagine the penalty would be you're disqualified. So to stop being disqualified, they warm the fuel back up and then had to start from the pit lane.
Still, the person last in the drivers is Nicholas Latifi. In 21.
Out of 20. How's he managed that?
Honestly, look, I'm not even joking. It's 21.
Even Hülkenberg, who was only like a reserve driver for a couple of races, is
listed higher. As 20. How have they done that?
I don't know. Alphabetical order?
Oh,
I don't. It's either that Hülkenberg has, even though he hasn't scored points, it's either that Hülkenberg has got ahead of him in the races that he's been in. He's got like a higher position, or they've just done it on alphabetical order. Which could be the case as well.
No, because it's Schumacher, Hülkenberg, then Latifi, all with zero.
So I imagine Schumacher has got closest to getting a point.
Yeah.
You know, and Hülkenberg has been just outside the points as well, but Latifi's been nowhere near. So although there are no points, maybe, you know, we'll have to check. We'll have to go back and check.
Work
and see where Hülkenberg came in the first couple of races.
Is that your homework?
And then and then we'll see where Latifi has come.
I love the fact
when he actually finishes
21st out of 20.
Yeah, that's not the best statistic, is it?
Thank you to the Formula One app for that's trolling, isn't it?
He does keep crashing though,
that's
doesn't he?
Amazing. What else is on your agenda?
Not much, really. No, not much. It was nice to see another race in America because they're a great spectacle and they put on a good show and the crowd's always good. I think the track could have been a bit better for overtaking.
Yeah,
that was my only criticism because even though there were these long straights, what you really need is you need not just a long straight because the DRS will get you kind of basically alongside. But you need to have a corner that you can outbreak at the end of it. And they didn't. The corners after the straights just weren't, they weren't that great for overtaking.
You also, on any other business, you were racing back, hopefully not picking up another 3 points on your licence, to get back in time for the race. And you missed Martin Brundle's pit walk.
I did.
He was interviewing people. He saw this really tall guy and he thought he was somebody who wasn't, and then he started interviewing him and they had to kind of
and it was just some tall chap.
Yeah, and he was just like, who? His first question was like, how are you finding it? Like, I need to watch it back again to understand, because I was talking at the time. But the gist of it was is that he then had to ask him who he was. And I think he did put out on Twitter, that's why I don't like doing that. And to be fair, like, I've never seen so many bodies. I mean, he was struggling even just to move. It was absolutely rammed with celebrities. It's America, it's Miami. It was always going to, like, be celebrity filled.
Yeah, but, it's not the grid walk is not an easy job.
Oh my god!
To be honest, the cameraman as well, because obviously Martin he's done it for years, and he's just got a microphone. He's not a big guy. He can just kind of squeeze in. Whereas imagine if you're some guy with like a full camera on your shoulder having to weave in and out exactly where Martin's going. It's not easy at all.
There was a really, really lovely awkward moment where him and David Coulthard both got to Christian Horner at the same time. They both came from different angles and got to him at the same time. And then, I mean, they handled it really well because they're like, should we just take it in turns? And they both asked him a question and... like they were using the microphones so that we got to hear both, but that was actually that was quite good. He got attacked by both at the same time.
Brilliant pincer movement.
Yeah it was just really great, obviously for a rival broadcast. But so next on the race circuit, let's have a look. I do believe it is Spain. España. So, Spain, and it's not this weekend, it's the weekend after.
Yeah, and it's Catalunya, which again isn't an amazing overtaking track, but I do like the layout.
Yeah, and it's not a sprint, is it? You don't have a sprint this time. Yeah. Dude, well,